fear is taking over so many of our lives, and it becomes a chameleon. And that's what I noticed in my own life. It's like it can just mimic and disguise itself in so many ways that most of the time we can be oblivious of the fear that we're living in.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello, you're listening to Premier Christian Radio with me, Sam Hales. I'm the editor of Premier Christianity Magazine, and you've joined us for The Profile, where we sit down with a different guest every week and find out something of their life and faith story. I'm delighted to say that my guest today on the show is Ellie Limebear. Ellie is a worship leader and artist. Ellie's latest album is called Welcome to the Bloodline, and she's invited us to meet her in Brighton. So here we are. Thank you so much for having us,
Ellie. Yes, oh my goodness, welcome to Brighton.
Thank you, it's great to be here. Now, you've always kind of lived in this area, is that right?
Yes.
For those who aren't acquainted with Brighton, what is so great about Brighton that you've lived
Everything. Your whole life here? I never want to move, Sam, I never want to move. But I grew up on the south coast of England, so was born in Chichester, and then grew up in a tiny little village around that area. And then we moved to Brighton as a family to help plant a church here about 15 years ago. And now I'm bringing up my family here. So it's just such a fun city, honestly. Lots going on, very creative. Got such a beautiful community here. So yeah, unless the Lord says go, I will happily stay in Brighton for the rest of my life.
What's the church scene like in Brighton, you know? Different parts of the country, you have churches that are struggling, churches that are thriving. Like, how would you sum up what it's like to be a Christian in a place like Brighton?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? There's actually quite a few churches here. Lots of, you know, small parish churches, lots of Anglican churches, but, you know, so many different denominations in Brighton, and actually some quite big churches too. You'd think that they'd all be quite small, but there's some just really, I feel like it's growing too. And even in our small church community in where we live in Brighton, it feels like there's more and more people every week joining and curious. It feels like there's a real curiosity. Like compared to when I was a teenager, I feel like Christianity was very much looked like that is so weird. You know, being the only Christian in school, it was like, that why? But now I feel like the conversation, it feels a lot more like, you know, people are a lot more open and probably to other spiritual things, not all good spiritual things, but just curious. So I'm excited for what God's doing in Brighton and happy to be here.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, here on the show, we always like to go back to the very beginning and talk about life growing up. So tell me a bit about what your memories of childhood were.
Fond memories, honestly. I'm the eldest of six children. And it's a big fam, the pack. And so our parents, Martin and Anna Smith, they have been leaders, I guess, and Dad was part of a band called Delirious. And we travelled a lot as kids, honestly. I feel like probably three times a year we do like big trips, tours, and hop around the world, honestly, as the pack with all of us. But also home life was really stable. Mum, like, I don't know how she did it, but she managed to kind of keep us kids just very much together and routined, and you know, church every Sunday and our weeks at school, and it felt very safe, honestly. And we grew up in our local church where my grandpa was the pastor, and all of my cousins, all of my family would go every Sunday, and I just feel like I guess from a very young age, my eyes were like open to see what God could do from a very young age. You know, it was a very charismatic church, people falling over in the spirit, people getting out of wheelchairs, people being healed, dance. There's just so much worship expressions going on that I really look back on my childhood. And I believed from a very young age from what I saw and heard. But I loved growing up in a big family, honestly. And we're still to this day, us kids, just like the best of friends, which I hold so
I wanted to ask
dearly.
You about that, because that's the impression you get from social media. But, you know, there's the kind of Instagram versus reality. Oh, like, are you all as close as you
are? No, we truly are. Like, we adore each other, got each other's backs, and very honest all at the same time. But it is, yeah, we live very close still. I think, you know, my sister literally lives at the bottom of my road, and we love being in each other's lives. And now I've got children too. That is so important for me, that my family is so involved in my children's life and being aunties and uncles. But yeah, growing up definitely in a Christian home, but very much in a still place where, like, it wasn't all Christian, you know, school life. We went to school, we weren't homeschooled, we went to school. That was really important for my parents, that we were brought up in spaces that weren't always Christian. So, yeah, lots of fond memories, honestly. Lots of growing up too, and being in rooms where you just have to, you're being challenged by people's skills and eye contact, and you're learning so much constantly, how to be in the room, how to engage with people, and which is, I guess, great things to learn as a kid.
Yeah. And was there a moment kind of where your faith became your own? You say you've got a very strong Christian upbringing, but are there times looking back in your teenage years where this was not just something that was family or was your parents, but it was something that was very real for you?
Yeah, definitely. I remember growing up, Mum and Dad would really encourage us all to find Jesus for ourselves. And they would remind us, like, guys, you can't just hang on the back of, like, our faith and our relationship with Jesus. Like, we found Jesus. And it's, you know, your choice to also find him. And so I remember always that, just like, yeah, I can't live my life on the back of Mum and Dad's faith. But I remember being 7 years old when I gave my life to Jesus. I remember it so clearly, like it was yesterday, where I remember going to my room, shutting the door, getting on my knees and simply asking Jesus to come into my life and be my friend, be my Lord and Saviour. And now I meet seven-year-olds, I'm like, gosh, that is so young. Yeah. Like, did you meet me? You know, that feels crazy, but I remember it so clearly and the conviction. And yeah, and even though I was so young, I probably straight after that went and played hopscotch or something. But like, I remember that decision was so real for me, and I knew that he was real. I knew that he's alive. So for me, that decision wasn't a hard one. It was an easy decision.
And if I'd known you when you were maybe not seven, but maybe 10, 11, 12, and I'd said, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? What would you have said?
Do you know what? Probably deep, deep, deep down, if I was really honest, it would be to do music and to sing. But I think I was so fearful and so, yeah, fear wiped out that dream a long time ago for me. And I probably would have said to be a photographer at that age. And it was the safe answer, probably, and knew that I could probably do it if I... But deep down, I think to do music, but I never told anyone and I never expressed that to anyone. But fear just kind of wiped that from me and kind of stole the dream and like even the passion for it. But I loved singing, and I'd sing in my room. I didn't want anyone to hear me sing, again, full of fear. I didn't do school competitions or anything like that. Even I only really got into like youth band stuff in my later teen years. So yeah, deep down it would be music, but I would have said probably I'll be a photographer, and that's what I did for so long, actually.
What was it that scared you about? Was it singing in public specifically? Was that the scary bit?
No, honestly, just the fear of so many things. Just fear of, it was just the coat, it felt like a coating of fear and the blurriness of like the future for me. Yeah, it wasn't even specific things at that time, but I just think I didn't even think about it too much because I knew it would probably like never happen. But here we are, and I am doing it. So by the grace of God, like, yeah, he's carrying me through.
And so tell me what changed between, on the one hand, not wanting to do singing, being fearful of it, to now as you sit here, you have released an album, you have toured, you are making music. What was the turning point? I was reading you were about 20 years old and you sort of felt like God was saying, this is something you're going to do. So tell me how that happened.
Yeah, it's definitely been a journey. Like, it has not been a ta-da! Yeah.
And I think
really?
It's a lot of people just say, oh, Ellie, daughter of Martin Smith, Delirious. Well, of course you were always going to be aware, but it's not as simple as that.
No.
So this was not something that you were being primed and ready and even wanting to do.
No, honestly. And like, I didn't know how to write songs. I honestly didn't know what I was bringing and what I could bring. I didn't know what I was good at in that sense. So I think leaning towards music, I was like, do you know what? I'll just leave it. You know, I don't know how to do this. And so it really was God who has led me through this and like opened doors. It has been him this whole time, who's like giving me confidence, giving me words to say and songs to sing. And it's a miracle, and that he's actually given me confidence and boldness to like step out. And definitely it's been a journey for sure. And that moment for me when I was 20 years old, when he spoke so clearly to me, I remember being like saying back to him, like, I don't want to do this though, like full of fear, like, please don't lead me into this. I've seen behind the scenes the sacrifice for both mum and dad of what this, you know, entails. And so I was like, oh, please don't. But I had to trust him, and he's like, he's still leading me through, you know, and showing me so much of what worship is and music and how to write songs still. And but I know from a young age, I look back, and my passion for music like all started around the piano. After piano lessons, I would just like, I didn't really enjoy that, but I just wanted to mess around with the piano. And I remember dad's hymn books would be lining up on the piano, or song books or songs he'd be working on at the moment. And I remember just finding myself wanting to find melodies to these lyrics and just drawn to like the words of particular verses in the Bible and wanting to make a song around that. And for hours I'd just be messing around, never did anything with it, but I loved the finding melodies part and wanting to create music. But it wasn't only until years and years, years later where I got invited to write for our local church here in Brighton with a bunch of other creatives, and my love for collaboration, my love for co-writing was awakened. And I was like, oh, I love this, to getting to be with people, but also writing together for like this purpose. I'm like, that is the best concoction ever. Yeah, and then getting signed to a label in America was definitely like another step of like faith. And I don't know what we're doing, but God, you're leading us there. And creating music. And now with Welcome to the Bloodline, my second album, I just have so much confidence that this is what, yeah, I'm supposed to be doing, is like writing music about Jesus, whether that's for believers or non-believers, like whoever needs to hear it, needs some truth or joy or some peace in their day. It's like, have this music, play it loud, send it to a friend, whatever resonates. But I'm now so passionate about writing, yeah, music full of truth.
It's really interesting you talk about confidence, because in listening to the album, you can hear that confidence right from the first track, the first single. You know, By Fear, and it's not just that it's punchy and it's confident, and I am, you know, the line about you know, you're not coming back, fear. This is a temporary thing, and there's a confidence there in the sound of it. And so clearly you're feeling that, you're feeling like album two, you kind of know who you are and you know where you're going.
Yeah, and honestly that's because of my real journey in life, of what God has been doing in my life, of breaking me free of fear. And that has been, you know, the past 5-6 years of journeying that with him. And there is a new confidence, there is a new boldness, and that's what I hope. And I can hear it myself too in these songs, of like, there's like this new boldness and confidence of like, oh yeah, Ellie does know who she is and she knows what she's bringing. Whereas previously, I love my other music, but I can even hear the fear in my voice in my past songs. I listen back and I'm like, wow, she was so full of fear. Even those, the songs were still, like, I believed in them and I love those songs, but I feel like this new batch of songs, there's like this real conviction of, yeah, who I am in Jesus and what, let's go, let's not hold back. By fear, not welcome anymore, we continue to march on, and be childlike in it too, like, you know, there's that too in this album, of like, we get to just like be with him, we get to like sit at the table, we get to like hear stories, we get to eat together as a community. You know, being a Christian, it's not a straight line. It's not living a life of Jesus. It's not boring, and it's not, you know, so black and white. It's just, it's so colourful, and we get to enjoy life with Jesus and with people. And so I hope that's what, as people listen to these new batch of songs, is this real, like, belief, and, like, he is real.
It's so interesting that you have had that personal struggle with fear and anxiety, and it's coming through in your music and in your life, because of course, you know, you will know a lot of people in your generation will relate to all of that. I mean, your generation has been called the anxious generation because these struggles with mental health have been so prevalent in your generation. You know, what What is your message? Are you saying that you have found the answer to this, or part of the answer to what has been described as an epidemic of fear amongst people of your age?
I know. I find that so sad whenever I hear that. When you know, label this generation as
it's not a great label.
And I just want to rebuke it every time, because it's just like, that is not. I don't want that to be the truth of our generation. And you know, it's like, what I find interesting is that it's actually it's so many old people. It's young and old. It's not just this generation who are struggling with their mental health or anxiety. It's like, it's such a broad spectrum of young and old all over the world. It's not even just one particular demographic. It's like, I feel like fear is taking over so many of our lives, and it becomes a chameleon. And that's what I noticed in my own life. It's like, it can just mimic and disguise itself in so many ways that most of the time we can be oblivious of the fear that we're living in. Well, actually, we've gotten so used to it that that's just the way things are. Or, oh, you know, my mum struggled, or my grandpa struggled. You know, that's just how it is in our family. But actually, I want to encourage us all to, like, eyes open here. We need to tackle this fear head on. There'd be times where I wouldn't be able to leave my house. There'd be things that I needed to do that I could not do. There was things that I really wanted to do that I couldn't do. And it's definitely been a journey. Again, I wasn't healed instantly. I wasn't, as much as I know that he can do that, he can heal like this. But for me, it's been a journey of claiming freedom and saying bye to fear in lots of practical ways, lots of spiritual ways of, you know, singing songs over myself and scripture, and actually being vulnerable with people for me was a huge thing of opening up of what's actually going on for so long. Yeah. And that continual of, like, accountability, checking in, praying, gathering, so many different things. And I've learned so much. And people like Jane, who I wrote a book with called Say Goodbye to Anxiety, she was such a mentor. And in her own journey with anxiety and to freedom, learned a lot from her. So, it's been such a journey. But, like, I look back over these past few years, like, oh my goodness, what he has, like, pulled me through, and the things I can do today, and even my mindset has changed. Like, that verse about how he can renew our mind, that is a real thing that he can do. He created our minds, he loves our minds, he loves our bodies, and he wants to heal them and renew it. And I've seen that in my life, of, like, a change of mindset and this renewing, which is miraculous. And so, and he can do that for anyone.
What were some of the things that you couldn't do that now you can?
Honestly, okay, so things like, for me, I couldn't drive for years and years and years. This is one little thing, but I was terrified of driving, and I don't know where it really came from, but it got to the point where I was, you know, I'm the eldest of six, and all my siblings passed before me. You know, they were picking me up to go places or dropping me off. And I remember it got to the point where I was about to have my first baby, and I thought, oh, this is, like, has to change, because I would love to be able to drive my baby to their doctor's checkup. You know, it's things like that where I want to be able to, like, as a mother, be able to drive my children here and here and here. And so, miraculously, I managed to pass my tests when my baby was 8 weeks old, and I remember in a very vulnerable state, still full of fear, honestly, but being able to pass. But again, a year after that, so fearful of driving, but now I love it. But it was, again, been a journey of, like, God, you know, what do I do? I'm so scared to get in the car. There was this one scenario where I simply asked God, like, what do I do? Because I need to go here. And the voice of fear was so loud, where it was like, oh, don't bother going, you'll probably crash, you won't find a space, you can just get Tom, my husband, to drop you off. Just the list of things, list of lies, and that was so loud. And I remember just asking God, what should I do? And he just so clearly spoke to me, said, Els, I have not given you the spirit of fear, I have given you the spirit of faith. And in that moment, I was like, oh yeah. Like, this isn't you talking, that is the voice of fear completely spiraling, wanting me to spiral down and keep me inside again, like he has done so many years. But actually in that moment, I was like given like spirit of faith again, of like and courage and boldness. I went to my car, still a bit scared, but felt like the boldness kind of took over and managed to do it. So I think like that's just a little example, but there's so many things like that where I never thought I'd be able to do things. And here I am, and he's like redeemed it and has brought joy to those things, which I'm very grateful
yeah,
for.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And how much of this is the combination of spiritual and emotional? Because, you know, you've co-written a book mm-hmm. about mental health, and there are, you know, helpful things to do with emotional health, but you're also talking about a spiritual component here, praying. And, you know, it's interesting what you say about perhaps not initially opening up to people. And I can think of Christians who will say, well, you know, I could go to my small group and tell them all that I'm struggling with anxiety. And I fear that they're going to say, well, just, you know, follow the Bible verse. Just don't be anxious, pray about it, and it's all just simple and easy. And there's that sense in which actually this is a real struggle for some people.
Yeah.
And it sounds like what you're saying is there are spiritual answers, but they're not spiritual easy answers. It's not just as simple as, well, you know, just pray about it, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So what's going on there? Is it a combination of emotional health and spiritual healing there?
I guess so. And still, I'm really not a professional talking about this. I'm still learning, honestly. But I know for me, like, that we are actually all human. We are very human, but have the power of God inside of us and, you know, the word of God that we can cling to. And I think that it is an and of like there are practical things that we can do, but also so many spiritual things that we can do. And I think the biggest thing when we open up to one another, like you said about that, it's pick your people well too, you know, you don't have to go and share, you know, but I think it's just finding that, you know, one or two people and a listening ear. And if you're thinking like, how do I, you know, I've got an anxious friend or anxious brother, you know, having listening ears is gold. And not having things to constantly just tell them and give advice. And is it actually just having listening ears sometimes is the most profound thing to be like, just tell me. I'm just going to sit here and you just tell me. And I had friends who did that. And it was just beautiful. There was no judgment. There was no, you know, it was just simply like, I hear you. I hear you. And I think back, you know, those verses that, you know, mourn with those who mourn, grieve with those who grieve. You know, that sentiment of like, if those are struggling, like, just be with them in it. Like, you don't have to be the hero. I think sometimes the most amazing thing and profound thing we could do is just sit with the people and hear them out. And then, you know, over time, the trust of, and now, right, we're going to pray over, you know, together. It's not just always sitting in it, but I think initially, like, letting people just speak about it is really important.
So the new album is called Welcome to the Bloodline.
Yes.
Tell me what that title means and where it comes.
Yes. So Welcome to the Bloodline really is an invitation in. And I guess when we say yes to Jesus, we are welcomed into the bloodline of God, which is crazy. We are like, we are adopted into the bloodline. And I think that thought will forever blow my mind is that, you know, when we say yes to Jesus, we're welcomed into the family of God, which is the biggest family ever. You know, your own family, your own blood family, in a way. It may look crazy, it may be chaotic, it may be broken, it may be together, but actually, when, as much as, you know, that is so important, but when you say yes to Jesus, you are welcomed into the biggest family. And that's all over the world, you know. I've got brothers in Nigeria, I've got sisters in Fiji. You know, that forever will blow my mind, the fact that I don't know them, but we're united in our belief of Jesus. And so this album really is a collection of songs of, it talks about unity, generations, it talks about family, my own testimony, my own story of his faithfulness, and really that invitation of, like, come on in, come and sit, come and see what he's done. The grandness of being part of the bloodline. It's royalty, our inheritance, all the things that we get welcomed into when we're part of the family of God. It's so grand and colourful, and it's a feast. And so I think this album, I want to remind everyone of that, of, like, it's not a dull thing being part of the family of God or being welcomed into the bloodline of God. Like, this is a joyful thing, and it may be chaotic and it may be messy, and there's, you know, You know, if we look at the table setting, you know, right now, my breakfast table every morning is chaotic. There's Cheerios on the floor. There's spilled orange juice. You know, it's like, that's kind of how it can be sometimes, family life. But there is like safety and there's like warmth and love. And that is what it is when we're part of the family of God. And yeah, our commitment to him. So it's, I love these songs. Honestly, I'm passionate about, there's 10 songs. And two of them, there's two features, one with Called Out Music and another song featured by Sam Henshaw. And it's just a real collaboration with friends too. All, you know, friends have been part of writing this project. Friends have been part of creative directing it. The props made by my friend. So many, it feels like a real collaboration of family and friends for this project. And getting to record it in a family home too, my producer, Troy Miller, his studio is attached to his family home, and that for me was really significant in recording this music. It was such a full circle moment for me in my childhood where our dad's studio was attached to our family home, and you know, he would be welcoming an artist, recording music for different people, and us as kids, I remember going in at the end of the day, listening to what they'd done, and then we'd all have dinner together. All, you know, so many different types of people around our table, eating together, chatting about the day, chatting about whole different things. And then for me, it was just this real surreal moment recording this project. I'm like, oh, I'm back, but I'm one of the artists now and recording in a studio with his kids coming in. You know, Troy's kids were coming in at the end of the day and hear the songs, and then we'd eat together. And you're like, this is crazy. Like, only God can kind of write that. And for it to be a really wholesome, holistic experience of writing music, that it was safe and it was family and it was unified, and my brothers have played on most of my these tracks, even that, like my real bloodline are on this, you know, in, within this music. So for me, again, so significant that yeah, there's so much family involved.
Hi, I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Every month, our team brings you deep, thoughtful journalism around the biggest topics affecting you as a Christian today. Our mission is to help you encounter God through the magazine. The latest issue features Switchfoot lead singer John Foreman. Plus, we're previewing the largest gathering of Christians ever. Find out more in the latest issue of Premier Christianity magazine. Welcome back to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. And this month, we've published my interview with the worship leader and singer-songwriter Ellie Limebear. You can read it in print or online right now at premierchristianity.com. Let's dive in now into the second half of my discussion with the worship leader, Ellie Limebear.
The last track of the album is called How Could I Not? And this song is really precious to me because it talks all about kind of me growing up knowing Jesus and what I'd seen. And the whole sentiment of this song is, how could I not believe in you? I've seen too much to not believe in you. And it goes on, the ending verse is all about this commissioning of like, now I'm older, I'm believing for my children, that they will, you know, see the wonder of his love now and go. And like what I've experienced, I hope that for my children too, that, that one day they will give their lives to Jesus. But that song is, yeah, very, really special to me. And then there's a song, the top of the album is a song called What a Friend. And when people ask me, what's your favourite worship song, like blah, blah, blah. And there's so many, I have so many amazing, you know, dear worship songs that have been a part of my journey of faith. But I would have to say one of, probably the top would be Dad's song, What a Friend I Found. And I just love that song. I forever love that song. I will lead that song now, like in different environments. I just love it. You know, that's Dad's way of talking about Jesus as a friend, what a friend. I don't think it was even on purpose, but like somehow this song came about and then it was called What a Friend. Mm. And it's my experience of Jesus being my friend. And it's my own take on, I guess, yeah, Dad's song in a way that I just subconsciously...
and it was subconscious. It wasn't until like at some point you looked at the lyrics, you're like, hang on, this is like, yeah, this is like Dad's
it was song. It was only after that I was like, oh my gosh, I've just like rewritten Dad's song, like, sorry Dad. But, like, thank you.
He's not going to sue you.
I hope not. Please not. Please. I'll do the dinner tonight. I promise.
Amazing. It makes a lot of sense. But I wanted to ask you about something that didn't immediately make sense.
And yes.
Is, what's with the eggs? So, just for those who aren't aware, like, all of the promo around this album, if you look at your social media feeds, if you look at the album cover, there's lots and lots of fried eggs. What's going on?
Don't you just love a fried egg, Sam? Don't you love it?
When I think worship and being lost in wonder love and praise, I don't then immediately think fried eggs.
I think Jesus loved a fried egg. You know, that was his... No, honestly, this... But honestly, this album has nothing to do with eggs.
Okay.
Nothing to do with eggs.
Okay.
But the whole sentiment around these large objects. So in every single, you'll see a large object. So in By Fear, the single cover, massive hands. In the next single, you've got massive socks. In the next cover for, what song is coming out? One God. There's like enlarged people. And then for Vulnerable, there's this massive flower. And the whole sentiment around that is like the surrealism, and it looks odd, like a giant egg. And the album cover is like a giant egg, and there's, you know, just odd things on the table. And with my team, we're just kind of like, oh, you know, the whole essence of this album is, you know, welcome to the bloodline. And what does that actually mean when we come into the bloodline? And it's a feast, and it's so much that he offers. And so the egg, the big egg, and all these things, it's really like insinuated, like, look how big our God is, really. Like, he can, you know, we might expect a little fried egg when we come in, but actually it's like, he's like, no, have the big egg. You know, it's like, have this. This is what I've, you know, made for you. And come in, eat it up. And so really all these big props is just that kind of surreal, like, oh, wow. It's not just this normal family that we get to be a part of. It's this surreal...
Yeah.
Colourful, extravagant, kingdom that we're part of.
So I love that. I love the eggs. I love the explanation. And the thing I love most about all that is it's the artistry. It's, I'm going to be artistic. I'm going to have, you know, this expression of my music using massive, great, big objects and cool and clever photography. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that with some worship music, we don't always get that, which is fine. But some worship music is a bit more just straight down the line. You are having fun with this. You are being artistic in your expression of it. And I guess that leads me to the question of, you know, on your website, you describe yourself as a worship leader and an artist.
Mm.
And, you know, how do you see that? Are these two different things? Are you trying to straddle a line? Is this a record of congregational worship songs for people to sing on a Sunday, or is it not? Is it something different? Is it artistic expression that doesn't quite meet those
yeah,
boundaries?
I know. I guess I've always have, because I love worship and I love to sing and I love leading worship. I love being at church. And then also part of me is that I love art. I love creativity. I love, you know, clothes, and I love... Yeah, going to galleries and inspired by photographs. And I think that's how God made me. Like, and that wasn't a mistake. That wasn't, like, he's made me to, like, yeah, be drawn to certain things and colours and people, you know. And so I feel like together, I guess my expression and how I worship and what I bring to the table, I guess it's just a bit of all of me. And whether people want to sing these songs at church, go for it. Whether you want to listen to them on your bus to work, go for it. Like, take them as you will. And honestly, I see it all as worship. I do. It's like, it's my worship to him. And honestly, I think I always am encouraged by that verse in Romans 12, where it talks about take your everyday eating, sleeping, going to work, and place it as an offering before God. I'm like, oh, that's your whole life. We get to worship him. That's everything. That's not just through our songs, that's through, yeah, our creativity, how we bake, how we speak to people, how we forgive, how we live our lives, how we welcome people in. You know, it's all of it that we can give to him.
So you didn't sit down and think, right, I'm going to write a song for someone to sing at 10 a.m. on a...
No, honestly, I'm not very good at that. I'm not. I would love to be.
But I think that's refreshing. And I think, you know... Even, and I did promise myself to not make this entire interview about your father, which would be very easy to do, but wouldn't be fair to you because you're your own person. But there is a link there, right? Mm. In that you will know your dad spent years writing songs, some of which were very popular in congregational worship, mm. some of which were not, and were mm. hitting the charts. And whenever I spoke to your dad about mm. this, he would say the same answer you've given, mm. which is, well, all of life is worship, and I don't want to feel like I'm pigeonholed. But, you know, you get the point that actually... There are those different categories, and some songs are written for 10 a.m. on a Sunday, yeah. and others are not. And my take on it would be your dad just straddled that divide.
Yeah.
It sounds like yeah. you want to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think we need it all. Mm. Like we need all the songwriters writing the songs that they feel convicted to write about. Whether that is you feel led to write those Sunday morning 10 a.m. songs, go. We need those songs. We need these songs. We need the songs for your Monday morning. We need the songs for, you know, at hospital and you're saying goodbye to a loved one. We need songs for joyful moments. You know, we need it all. And I think my encouragement to like songwriters and as artists, it's like, don't be distracted by what so-and-so is doing. It's like we need to stay in our lanes here. We need to like, what God's put on my heart to share and bring, I'm going to go. And you're going to be here in your lane and go. And whether that's writing songs for school assemblies, go. We need everyone. And like, don't be discouraged that it doesn't look like someone else's. Or it's like, no, go with your conviction, what he's calling you and leading you into. And I guess, yeah, I guess it's similar for me and Dad in the way of how we feel led of the breadth of different songs. And maybe they can lead them out on Sundays. Or maybe it's for your small group or... But actually, we need it all. We need all these songs to, like, lead us back to him. And it's different. We need the different styles. We need the eclectic. We need the loud. We need the quiet. Like, we are all so human. We all listen to so much different music. And it's going to hit different people. So, like, stay in your lane and bring your sound. It's so important.
Yeah. So, I'd love to chat a little bit more about family. We spoke loads already. But... tell me, first of all, how you met your husband.
Yes, we met at church. Good old church. But we met, it must have been like 10 years ago now. And I was 15, would you believe it? And he was 18. I was 15 turning 16. He likes me to clarify that. But he had just moved down to Brighton to study music business and... started coming to our church, but he was a new Christian, just got saved. And at that time, our church was so small, so I knew absolutely everyone there. And you look out and you're like, oh, yes, so-and-so's there, so-and-so's in that seat. But I remember leading worship with Dad, and I remember looking at him like, he's new. I've not seen him. And so I remember after the service, he was like hanging out with my siblings. I think he'd just joined the youth team too, so they'd just gone on a youth weekend away. But anyway, got chatting and then became friends on Facebook, went out for a coffee, even though I didn't drink coffee. I was still 16. I literally just drank water, which was so boring. Desperate for the toilet after like 3 jugs of water. But yeah, we started officially dating when I was 18 and he was, yeah, 20, 21.
Why officially?
Officially, I know it is 2 missing years. Well, basically, because I was part of the youth group and he'd then joined working for our church, doing transformation, like the homeless ministry. And so there was this kind of like, I guess, youth group. Exactly. And so our leadership team.
I have the same story, don't worry.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. We're all in the same boat.
And like him, I like to clarify around exactly what he's
So when I was on my 18th birthday, we could officially start dating. But our leadership team was amazing. They're like, honestly, guys, we trust you, but it's just, you know, precautions. So we look back at that time like, so grateful. We were just literally the best of friends and with our friendship group, got to know our families. And then when I was 20, we got married. So young. But mum and dad got married at the same age. So they couldn't say anything.
And the thing is, again, I have a similar story. So when you are that age and everyone's telling you you're so young, you do not feel young. I'm not young. I'm It's only when you look back a bit and you're like, oh, actually,
so young.
Photos,
I'm so young.
Young.
Honestly, I think I still only knew how to make beans on toast, and plain pasta. So I'm like, wow. Come a long way.
Yeah.
But so grateful. Now we've been married 8 years this year, and have two little boys. So obviously it was the right thing. Obviously it was the right thing. Then we got married then. But yeah, no, love. He's such an amazing man. And he honestly has been a huge part in my music career, I guess,
you
too.
He studied music business.
He studied music business.
Now your manager. So yeah. You don't just live together and raise children together. You work together.
Yeah, I know.
How does that work?
I know. Some people are like, how does that work? But somehow it works. And we love it. We love working together. Obviously days and moments we're like, ooh. You know, there's moments of like, oh, this is, you know, a bit tricky. But yeah. Actually, it's the best thing because he knows me so well. I know him so well. And so, he's the best advocate, I guess, and spokesperson. So we've now worked together for 8 years too. So we got married and started working together at the same time. So lovely little test, but we're still here, still married and still working together. So no, he's unbelievable though. He is so the brains and the heart, honestly.
And tell me about the kids.
Yes, we've got two little boys. Maccabee is 3 turning 4, and then we've got a little boy called Wilson too, who's just about turned 2. So two little boys in the house. It's a lot of fun, a lot of Nerf guns, a lot of Cheerios between the toes. It's a lot of joy. They are very funny. I don't know how they've got a sense of humour at this age, but they do. But yeah, a lot of fun. And we love sticking. We have this saying in our house, like, us linebackers stick together. We've got it on our wall. And we do go everywhere together. It's the pack of us four that we travel a lot together. We stay at home and eat curries, you know. That's our boys' favourite meal, is our local takeaway, Bindi's, and that gets requested once a week, probably. But, you know, we love doing things together, sticking together. But they're good boys. They have been all over the world already and somehow still enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, you know, just thinking again, for your generation, the people you write music for, you know, do you ever feel like there's a real need to talk about particular issues in songs? I mean, what we said about fear and anxiety is perhaps a good example, because you see this sometimes even in the worship world, where actually a song breaks through because it's saying something new that people need to hear in that moment. And, you know, do you feel like, and it's great to hear you talk about, you know, dad's songs and past and how that's inspired you, but there must be a part of you as well that thinks, okay, what's God doing now and looking to the future, and what does this generation need to hear in our worship or just in our music?
Yeah, oh, 100%. I think there's, we want to continue to move forward, don't we? And like, you know, this next generation, what do they need to know? What do they need to hear? What do they need to be reminded of? And I'm so grateful for the artists and songwriters who are writing songs that are bringing revelation and teaching, and there's so many songs that are teaching, and they teach me all the time. Like, oh yeah, that's God, and you know, that story or reminder of that. And so I'm so grateful of this this new wave of songs and songwriter and worship leaders who are bringing that. And I hopefully can like add to that, and with these songs and the notion of that, yeah, we do serve a big God. I think that's something that I'm always drawn to, is that we can become so inward, can't, with our lives and think small. Yeah, like I've talked about fear and anxiety, and we can look, keep it, you know, the control of our lives and keep it tidy and blah, blah, blah. But actually, like, we do serve a big God, and there's a lot to be done too, you know, salvations too. You know, there's so many things that... I want to see, and hopefully this generation want to be a part of and to claim. And there's a whole load of things, honestly, isn't there? But yeah, I think it's just keep pursuing him is the main thing, isn't it? Keeping your eyes on him.
So there's this word that comes up in your music, in lots of music, revival. I know you just re-recorded Revival Town with your dad, and that was amazing to think about, wow, that song being given new life for a new generation. And I think it was you who were saying, believing in revival for the next generation. What does that, if we could dream for a minute, like, what would that look like? What would that mean to you? Because the word gets used a lot, right?
Yeah.
Christian circles, revival. But what practically would that mean, and would that look like, that you're believing for
the
next generation?
honestly, yeah, you could pull apart that word a million ways, can't you? But I think it's lives being transformed, isn't it? People coming to know Jesus, it's transformation, it's healings, it's redemption in marriages, it's cities coming alive. There's like, yeah, colour, joy in family homes and even like in our society of, you know, the foster care system, there's, you know, food banks, there's so much that our society, I guess, is part of and needs, you know, but wouldn't it be amazing if, like, wow, we no longer need the food bank in this country, that actually, like, people, things get turned about, you know, and revival, I mean, you could just pull apart that in a million ways, but just people singing again, people dancing again, inside the church, outside the church, that forgiveness, that there's people coming to know him, I guess. The city comes alive, the towns come alive, and just going out, just continue to pray for people. And I mean, wouldn't that be amazing to see? I would love to see our city, like, come alive in truth, you know. And lots, I guess, Brighton, you can look at Brighton and think, wow, it's so alive, you know, but there's a lot of death here. There's a lot of darkness in this city, as much as it's very creative and colourful and, you know, Sussex by the sea. Like, there's a lot of dark things that happen in the city and down our roads next door, you know. It's not all sunshine. And I think, wow, what it looked like for, like, light to actually break through in our cities and our towns and our down our streets, and for that to be life, and people don't have to turn to this or that to give them fulfillment, but actually they realize that, I don't need any of that, I just need Jesus. I think that is revival, is people just letting go of things, isn't it? Things that you know, that take off your sackcloth and, you know, put on a garment of praise. It's like, oh yeah, wow, can you imagine if we all did that? Take off our sackcloth, the dead things of us, and put on our garment of praise, whatever that looks like. But I think that's exciting.
I suppose I was just wondering if there was ever a pressure to... it sounds like there wasn't. There was never like a pressure to sort of follow in
footsteps. Yeah, he never...
Like, they held it really lightly.
Yeah, they never said... Yeah. I remember asking Dad, like, did you know... Oh, yeah, I remember asking him, did you know that, like, I was going to do this? Like, did you know that this was kind of, like, all my life? He's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. As a little girl, like, as a baby, like, there were words spoken over me, wow, literally the day I was born, about what I'm doing now. And so he was like, oh, yeah, without a shadow of doubt. But he was like, but I never, ever wanted to, you know, put that on you. It was, like, your own time and discovery and... in the end, it's like you and Jesus. And so I'm very grateful for that, actually, that there was never a push. There was encouragement, for sure, and there was like, Els, like, do you want to jump up, put some ears in, do a bit of backing vocal, no pressure. But I think it'd be wicked, you know, as like an early teenager, or, you know, mum like, oh yeah, Els, just, yeah, no, it's not. But there was this real lightness to all of us kids, I would say, of like, yeah, where do you think he's leading you? And if so, like, go for it. Yeah. We're going to encourage you into it. But I've never felt pressure ever from my parents to do this or to write a particular way. Or even now when I will always show Dad my songs that I'm working on, or, you know, send him a link to things. And what do you think? Is this actually true? does this actually work? And, you know, sit down together and like... Yeah, it's he will tell me, sure, exactly. Like, he's not going to lie to my face. Oh yeah, constantly, not constantly, but like, he will, if I ask him to, he will. But there's always encouragement, and he knows that we actually write songs very differently. And I've learned that even writing with him. I love writing with Dan, but we actually write really differently. And our wording and our melodic way of putting things is actually quite different. And so I love... Yeah, they've been very gracious in our, like, in the releasing of us kids of, yeah, if you feel like that's it, go. And we're going to be right behind you. So not pressure, which I'm grateful for, yeah.
And presumably once you've made the jump and were like, I am doing music, he's, I would have thought, been helpful in opening all sorts of doors and making connections.
Yeah, do you know what? It's like, It's interesting because it's funny, like I look back over even musical stuff and people and meetings, and it isn't, it honestly isn't. Like lots of people, Dad's like, I've never met them. Who are they? Who are you meeting today? Who's that? I'm like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And so mostly it's like friends that I've kind of known from growing up in the house, of people that would come over, or different worship leaders that I already have a relationship with and Dad's like welcomed us into. But funny enough, it has been a lot of people that Dad doesn't know. That's probably a bit weird to him. Like, who are you meeting? Who you're writing with? And they're of course, yeah, it's so not actually a ton of that, which is interesting. But there's the trust, I guess, for people
Well,
who.
you've probably grown up being like, oh, you're Martin's daughter, but the time is now coming where it'll be, oh, you're Ellie's dad.
Oh no,
Flip round, right?
I'll always be his daughter. Yeah.
I'm Sam Hales, and you have been listening to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. Really hope you enjoyed today's conversation. There's lots more available on The Profile podcast, so do search for The Profile wherever you get your podcasts from for hundreds of great interviews with leading Christians from all walks of life. You can also access us on the Premier Plus app or at premier.plus. We'll see you back on the show next week. Until then, take care and God bless.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.